This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Able Living focuses on the needs of people with different abilities. Hear a wealth of information on health, work life, sports, the arts, individual accomplishments, and much more, all focused on other-abled human potential. Able Living, coming up right now on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Able Living, and I'm your reader, Melinda Ambrose, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from Move United, Disability Scoop, Disabled World, and Careers and the Disabled. I'll begin with DisabilityScoop.com, copyright 2025, Disability Scoop, LLC. New initiative aims to bring doctors up to speed on Down syndrome, by Sean Heasley, October 22, 2025. Few people with Down syndrome have access to doctors specializing in the chromosomal disorder, but a new effort is underway to ensure that physicians nationwide know how to care for this population. An initiative launching this week offers a free 2-hour training course for healthcare professionals in treating adults with Down syndrome. The online course qualifies for continuing medical education credits, which doctors often need to maintain their licenses. The training program is part of a broader information hub called Care Down Syndrome, developed by the National Down Syndrome Society, which features resources on everything from women's health and weight management to Alzheimer's disease as they relate to individuals with Down syndrome. We created Care Down Syndrome to close critical gaps in care for adults with Down syndrome, said Candy Picard, president and CEO of the National Down Syndrome Society. This initiative empowers healthcare professionals with the confidence, knowledge, and resources they need to deliver enhanced, more personalized care. Only 5% of adults with Down syndrome have access to specialty clinics for those with the developmental disability, the nonprofit indicated, and doctors often receive minimal training in medical school on the condition. The National Down Syndrome Society said it worked with more than 40 national experts to create Care Down Syndrome. The group indicated that the new course and all of the materials that are part of the initiative were peer-reviewed by experts and endorsed by the Down Syndrome Medical Interest Group, USA, and the American Academy of Developmental Medicine and Dentistry. Too often, primary care providers are asked to meet the complex needs of adults with Down syndrome without having access to the specialized training or resources needed to best serve this population, said Mike Musalem of the Linda and Mike Musalem Foundation, which provided support for the new resource. Care Down Syndrome is tackling this challenge head-on by providing accessible tools and educational resources based on the expertise of leaders in this area. And now from Disability Scoop, SSI Social Security Benefits Will Rise Next Year by Sean Heasley, October 24, 2025. Monthly payments to Social Security and Supplemental Security Income beneficiaries are set to increase. The Social Security Administration said Friday that benefits will go up 2.8% in 2026. The change is due to an annual automatic cost of living adjustment, or COLA, that's tied to inflation. As a result, the maximum federal SSI benefit for individuals will reach $994 per month, up from $967 this year. The top benefit for couples will grow to $1,491 per month compared to $1,450 this year. Actual payments can be higher because some states contribute extra. Social Security is a promise kept, and the annual cost of living adjustment is one way we are working to make sure benefits reflect today's economic realities and continue to provide a foundation of security, said Social Security Administration Commissioner Frank J. Bisignano. The cost of living adjustment is a vital part of how Social Security delivers on its mission. This year's COLA announcement was delayed due to the government shutdown. However, the Social Security Administration said that the increased benefits will begin December 31st for the nation's 7.5 million SSI beneficiaries and in January for those on Social Security, like in years past. The COLA for 2026 is slightly higher than the 2.5% rise for this year, but falls short of the 3.1% average over the last decade, federal officials said. The Social Security Administration said it will mail a one-page notice to beneficiaries starting in early December notifying them of their new benefit amount and any deductions, or individuals can access the information in their account on the agency's website. Shannon Benton, executive director of the Senior Citizens League, a nonpartisan group that advocates for seniors, said that the meager increases in Social Security benefits aren't enough. Her group is calling on Congress to impose a minimum COLA of 3% and change the measure that's used to calculate the increase to one that better reflects beneficiaries' spending habits. And now, from disabled-world.com, copyright 2025, Disabled World, Supporting Disabled Professors in Higher Education, by Michelle Ortiz, October 24, 2025. In higher education, the image of a professor is often limited by outdated stereotypes. Many imagine a professor as someone who is able-bodied, highly visible, and authoritative. This narrow view makes it easy to overlook the existence and contributions of disabled professors, who challenge assumptions not just about who teaches, but about what it means to lead, inspire, and build knowledge within academic communities. The importance of this topic lies in dispelling those stereotypes. When we recognize disabled professors as part of academia, we open the door to new perspectives, better mentorship, and a richer understanding of diversity and inclusion. These stories help us rethink what capacity and expertise truly mean, and why seeing disability as part of academic life benefits everyone. As we move into the next section, we'll examine the most common myths, especially the belief that professors must be perfectly able-bodied. By addressing these misconceptions, we set the stage for a more honest look at reality. Myth: who should be a professor? Across universities, there's a persistent and deep-rooted myth about what a professor should be: able-bodied, energetic, and confident at the front of a classroom. Society tells us, sometimes silently, sometimes outright, that the ideal academic leader is physically agile, can manage long hours without accommodation, and never requires visible support. Job postings, hiring committees, and student expectations may unconsciously reinforce this, overlooking candidates who disclose disabilities or request accommodations. This myth is reinforced every semester, shaping attitudes about who belongs in faculty roles. When technology fails to accommodate professors with vision or hearing loss, or when physical spaces are not wheelchair accessible, the message is clear: only certain bodies are welcome in academic settings. When a faculty member uses assistive devices, flexible schedules, or alternative communication methods, colleagues might see these adjustments as weaknesses rather than essential tools for empowerment. These misconceptions ignore an entire spectrum of disabilities: physical, sensory, cognitive, emotional, and developmental. Many professors develop chronic conditions over their careers, quietly self-accommodating in ways that go unseen. Others must fight for every tool or flexibility just to do the work they love. The visible and invisible barriers serve as constant reminders that the myth of the perfectly able-bodied professor is not only unrealistic, but actively harmful. Reality: disability among faculty. Contrary to the myth, disability is far from rare among university professors. The spectrum spans physical, sensory, cognitive, and developmental disabilities, each with its own challenges and adaptations. Faculty with limited mobility might use wheelchairs or specialized desks. Visually impaired professors might rely on screen readers or braille, while those who are deaf or hard of hearing may use interpreters or captioning technology. Beyond visible disabilities, many manage chronic conditions or neurodivergence, often without disclosure out of fear of stigma. The daily reality for these faculty goes deeper than ramps or extended deadlines. Navigating inaccessible campuses, outdated classroom tech, or rigid procedures requires constant problem solving. Professors spend hours coordinating with IT for accessible platforms, negotiating review times, or advocating for aids that others take for granted. Despite these barriers, disabled professors develop unique strategies and resilience, drawing on lived experiences to relate deeply to students and enrich academic culture. Strategies and adaptations, tools and approaches faculty use. Behind every disabled professor's success are countless personalized strategies and adaptations. Professors with visual impairments use screen readers, braille displays, and Zoom software. Faculty with mobility disabilities plan class locations carefully, use adjustable desks, or rely on voice-to-text tools. Deaf or hard-of-hearing professors use captioning software and interpreters, while those with cognitive differences rely on color-coded schedules and structured routines. Flexible schedules and remote work options are not special treatment, but essential accommodations. Professors may adjust teaching hours to account for medical needs or collaborate with allies and staff to bridge gaps in accessibility. These adaptations show creativity and persistence, unlocking new teaching methods and inclusive practices that benefit all students. Similarities and differences, faculty versus students. While disabled students and faculty both need accommodations, their processes differ. Students follow structured procedures through disability services, while professors often navigate HR or ADA coordinators with less guidance. Faculty may have to prove their disabilities repeatedly, negotiate with supervisors, and risk stigma or privacy concerns. Unlike students, professors rarely receive detailed support, leaving them vulnerable to inconsistent outcomes and unclear accountability. Why disability matters? Support for faculty. Equal support for professors is essential to building inclusive academic communities. Faculty deserve robust, empathetic accommodations, yet too often their needs are sidelined. Minimal institutional guidance forces professors to shoulder the emotional and logistical burdens of self-advocacy. Investing in adaptive technology, HR advocates, and accessible policy design transforms these dynamics and empowers disabled faculty as role models. Stories of professors with seen or unseen differences. Professors bring both visible and invisible challenges into the classroom. One professor in New Jersey with cerebral palsy has faced harmful misconceptions and underfunding, showing the resilience needed to thrive in academia. Another professor with memory-related challenges demonstrated how invisible differences impact organization and teaching flow, but also how understanding and patience foster empathy and connection. These stories remind us that compassion and context matter. Every teaching style reflects humanity and the shared pursuit of knowledge. Call to action: advancing equity for disabled faculty. Achieving lasting change for disabled professors requires systemic reforms, transparent accommodation processes, funded adaptive technology, and leadership training for inclusion. Policies must guarantee timely responses and appeals, while collaborative working groups help sustain accessibility efforts. Celebrating disabled faculty through recognition and leadership opportunities reinforces that disability and excellence coexist. Closing reflection toward a more inclusive future. The evolution of higher education depends on recognizing and supporting every voice. By championing equity for disabled professors, institutions inspire new ideas and reinforce values of dignity and respect. True inclusion grows through commitment, collaboration, and compassion, ensuring every scholar can reach their full potential. Insights, analysis, and developments. Editorial note. The presence of disabled professors in academia isn't merely about meeting legal requirements or checking diversity boxes. It represents a fundamental shift in how we define intellectual leadership and scholarly achievement. These faculty members don't just overcome barriers, they reconstruct them, creating pathways that benefit all students and colleagues. When institutions invest genuinely in accessibility infrastructure and transparent accommodation processes, they signal that academic excellence comes in many forms. The real measure of a university's commitment to inclusion isn't found in its mission statement, but in whether a professor who uses a wheelchair can access every classroom, whether blind faculty receive technology support without bureaucratic battles, and whether neurodivergent scholars can thrive without hiding their authentic selves. Higher education's future depends on this evolution, where disability is recognized not as limitation, but as one more dimension of the human experience that enriches teaching, research, and campus life. Disabled World. And now from Careers and the Disabled, copyright 2025 Equal Opportunity Publications. Joe Annaud keeps our mail coming at USPS. Andrew Joe Annaud has worked as a mail handler for the United States Postal Service, USPS, at the South Jersey Processing and Distribution Center, P&DC, for nearly 20 years. I work with processing machines that sort flats, the large envelopes, newsletters, and magazines that sends them to the main sorting machines, he notes. A photo of Andrew Joe Annaud standing in a sorting facility in front of chutes for sorting mail into totes. He's wearing a blue uniform with a hat and glasses, holding flat envelopes, putting them into a tote. The caption, Andrew Joe Annaud is a mail handler for the United States Postal Service, USPS, at the South Jersey Processing and Distribution Center, P&DC. Joe Annaud loves his work, too. My job is physically active, so I'm not just standing around. I also enjoy the people I work with, he shares. Joe Annaud has severe Tourette syndrome, TS, which is a condition that affects the nervous system. The disorder results in sudden, unwanted, and uncontrolled rapid and repeated movements or vocal sounds called tics. Roughly 200,000 Americans have a severe form of TS. I was diagnosed when I was 11 and have a lot of different tics throughout the day, he explains. His disability presented some difficulties at the start of his career, but after meeting with his managers, they were able to better accommodate his needs, which led to a successful career. I credit my managers and fellow co-workers for their continued understanding and their willingness to work with me. They're always willing to go out of their way to assist me when I need it. They also allowed me to work the shift that's best suited to me and my Tourette's, he adds. In the nearly 2 decades he has worked for USPS, Joe Annaud has undergone deep brain stimulation surgery, DBS. According to Johns Hopkins University, DBS is a neurosurgical procedure that uses implanted electrodes and electrical stimulation to treat movement disorders associated with Parkinson's disease, PD, essential tremor, dystonia, and other neurological conditions. Since his surgery, his tics have been reduced 95%, and he says he can now perform his duties with dignity. Learn about Washington, D.C. headquartered USPS via Facebook, X, Instagram, Threads, Pinterest, and YouTube. Explore careers at usps.com/careers. And now from Disability Scoop, Ed Department Making Plans to Offload Special Education by Michelle Diamond, October 23, 2025. The U.S. Department of Education is in talks to move oversight of special education programs to another federal agency. An Education Department official said this week that the agency is working to make good on pledges from President Donald Trump and Secretary of Education Linda McMahon to close the department and send special education elsewhere. Secretary McMahon has been very clear that her goal is to put herself out of a job by shutting down the Department of Education and returning education to the states, said Maddie Biederman, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Communications at the Education Department. The department is exploring additional partnerships with federal agencies to support special education programs without any interruption or impact on students with disabilities, but no agreement has been signed. Trump said in March that he would move special needs programs to the Department of Health and Human Services. At the time, the administration offered no details about which programs would move, what the process would look like, or when it would occur. HHS officials referred an inquiry this week about the matter to the Education Department. Biedermann did not respond to questions about which agencies the Education Department is in talks with, exactly which programs could be affected or when this might happen, but she indicated that funding should not be impacted. Secretary McMahon is fully committed to protecting the federal funding streams that support our nation's students with disabilities, Biedermann said. The possible changes come as the federal role in special education is already in upheaval. Earlier this month, 121 employees were let go from the Education Department's Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services, leaving no more than a handful of staff in the agency's Office of Special Education Programs, which administers funding and oversees implementation of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The layoffs were temporarily paused by a federal judge, but disability advocates said that if the job cuts go through, there is no way that such a skeleton staff could fulfill the statutory requirements of IDEA. Shifting special education oversight to another agency could further undermine services for students with disabilities, education and disability advocates warned. Moving special education out of the Department of Education demonstrates a disregard for the educational needs of students with disabilities, said Sasha Podelsky, Director of Advocacy for AASA, the School Superintendents Association. America's special education students are embedded at every level, in every program that the department oversees. Siloing these supports, funding, and services in a separate agency undermines the achievements of the last 50 years to fully include special education students in every aspect of public education. It's a step backward for education and for our country. Nicole Fuller, Associate Director of Policy and Advocacy at the National Center for Learning Disabilities, noted that the Education Department has experts on IDEA, data collection, monitoring of states, and more. She likened moving special education from the Education Department to HHS to expecting a child's pediatrician to teach them. Both pediatricians and teachers play valuable roles in a child's life and can work in tandem, but have unique skill sets, she said. There are also questions about the legality of transferring special education programs out of the Education Department. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, clearly designates the Secretary of Education as the only agency head responsible for ensuring states and agencies meet the conditions and requirements in IDEA, said Stephanie Smith Lee, co-director of Policy and Advocacy at the National Down Syndrome Congress, who served as director of the Education Department's Office of Special Education Programs, or OSEP, under President George W. Bush. Moving OSEP would have a detrimental impact on students with disabilities, teachers, and schools. And now from Move United, copyright 2025, Move United. Get on the ice with Wauwatosa Curling Club, Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. The Wauwatosa Curling Club will be hosting a free event with the Bold, B-O-L-D, group in southeastern Wisconsin for anyone who identifies as low vision or blind on December 13th. The on-ice time will run from 12 to 2 p.m., and then there will be an opportunity for a great curling tradition of broom stacking, a.k.a. socializing, afterwards, that include drinks and snacks until about 4 p.m. This event is meant for anyone, no matter their skill level, and is a great opportunity to learn about curling. This event will take place at the Wauwatosa Curling Club in Hart Park in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. If you are interested in the event or have questions, please email adaptive@wauwatosacurlingclub.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Melinda Ambrose with Able Living. I hope you have enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.